Hey, let's talk about home mortgages and the best strategy for dealing with our mortgages. I mean, there seems to be a big debate. There's a perception that you should put down as much as possible as a down payment and then pay the mortgage off as soon as you can. But in your book, you lay out the case why that's not necessarily true.
That's right.
So let's break that down. Talk about mortgages and our fear of debt and how all that plays into our personal net worth.
Well, it's great. Well, a lot of the fear around mortgage comes from generations ago, and we don't even understand it. Like in the Great Depression, mortgages were callable, meaning you had a 30-year mortgage, but if the bank wanted the money sooner, they could say, hey, you got to get it to us in 60 days. Now, that would, if that was still the case, I would be one of those people like pay that mortgage off as soon as possible. Also, buy a tiny home and then pay it off as quickly as possible. But that's changed. Now, mortgages are not callable. They are good for their term of existence, let's say 30-year fixed. So we got that out of the way. Now comes to, well, then do I want to pay it off right away, like, or slowly over time is how most people do it, because the bank says, hey, if you make an extra payment a year, you're going to pay it off in 20 years instead of 30. And this is the funny thing. I think everybody should greet with more skepticism. They say, look how much less interest you'll pay. Now, I've never met an executive that went to the company they work for and said, hey, here's how you could pay me 2/3 the amount of money. Never. Why is the bank telling us, here's a way you could pay us less? Because they make the money on the flow, not on the interest rate. They want that money paid back quickly. Now, consider if what we're doing is, let's say we have a home and it's, you know, I'm going to make it $1 million home, and we put down $200,000. So 20% down, you avoid PMI, et cetera. Well, the bank has $800,000 at risk. Do they want that home from me? No. They want to give me all the latitude in the world to make my payments if anybody was around Las Vegas or Arizona markets after 2008, there were people living in homes making payments when they could to their mortgages for years. Because the bank likes it. They can call it an underperforming debt, not a loss they have to absorb. And so you end up with a lot of latitude the more that's owed on your home. Now, let's say two people, one person is still pretty leveraged on their home. Now, by the way, because they didn't make extra payments to their mortgage, they also have a bunch of money somewhere else. Then the other person, they've been diligently paying it down over time, and they only owe $400,000. And now something goes wrong. Now, we've actually had clients that worked in this fancy part of the bank called the Special Asset Division. And you know what the Special Asset Division does? It deals with all the people not paying their notes. And they have, I kid you not, a green pile and a red pile. And everybody who has a truckload of equity in their home, they go in the green pile because they know they can foreclose rapidly, sell that thing on the courthouse steps, and their only obligation to the homeowner is to give them everything that was above and beyond the debt and the, you know, accompanying expenses like penalties or attorney fees. So if they sold your $1 million home for $550,000, and that only leaves like $2,000 that goes to you. They just give you the $2,000. That's it. They don't owe you anything else. They just want to sell as quickly as possible, which is why they like those homes with a lot of equity. So the more you pay down your home over time, you've made yourself no safer. You've made the bank a lot safer. So what we recommend our clients do is grow your money somewhere else. Then when you have enough, write a check and pay it off. You'll do it faster. You'll have more control and far more safety along the way, building up that cash on your own and writing a check than you ever will making like two extra payments a year.
Yeah, that's great advice. Paul, I have some boys who are heading out into the world now, and you know, just affording a home is so expensive. What are you advising, what are you telling younger investors about whether to purchase or rent homes when they first start out?
Well, there's especially if they're younger men, I would point them to YouTube, and there's a couple of good videos out there on renting versus owning where they break it apart. And by the way, it's not that like a home is not necessarily the path to, you know, the golden streets of retirement. People can accumulate a lot of wealth. We have some that rent and or have rented for years, and accumulate a lot of capital. So having to buy a home doesn't need to be on the list of wealth generation. But that having been said, one of the first things any young person is going to be recommended to do is max out your 401k. Hmm. You had no money before, you're making some money now, put as much as you can in the 401k. I would agree it makes sense to get your match. But then you should start a what's called a non-qualified, meaning it's not in any IRA, 401k, et cetera, just a regular investment account. Pick somebody can go direct to Betterment. And Betterment has a perfectly fine 80-20 allocation. They charge almost nothing. And somebody could start just sending in their extra money every month, so at least it gets some growth, and they're building money that's not in a retirement plan on their balance sheet. Now, that'll do two things. One, you can mimic what it's like to pay a mortgage because I'm going to pay my rent. Say, I don't know what rent is now for a young man, but let's say it's $1,500, but I've got $2,500 a month that my mortgage might be one day. Well, I'm going to take that extra $1,000 and make it like a bill, but it's going to my investment account. Now, over time, I'll end up with enough money plus growth to be able to do the down payment. But then I'm doing the down payment and really thinking about it, like, I saved up $100. Let's say they've aged and now they're 26. Just make it up a number. Now they've got to think about, like, do I really want to sell my 100,000 investments to be able to buy a house and end up with a larger house payment? Or do I kind of like this just shoving money aside thing? Then you're making it from a better position to make the assessment because your hard-earned money has to go in that down payment. Whereas there were so, and there still are some programs like 3% down, et cetera, you can do. But I'm a huge fan of people should be in the discipline of making the mortgage payment, if you will, long before they have the mortgage. And being in the discipline of making the payment allows it to save up elsewhere. And it might be the case they realize, well, I can get to where I can buy a home and I'd rather buy a home somebody else is going to rent from me than buy a home I'm going to live in.
Yeah, so your view on the 401k is that if you put all of your money into the 401k, let's say you max it out for years, that money's restricted and it's going to get taxed on the back end. And so for those reasons, it's just not as flexible as other forms of investing.
Well, sure. Just imagine, you know, that same child has $100,000 in their 401k. Can they use it for the down payment? They can take out a little bit. They could take a loan if their employer allows loans. Except that loan's going to be taxable if the company shuts the 401k down on them, or if they leave employment, they might have taxability on it. Or worse, what we've even seen happen is somebody has an idea of their dream house. All they've ever done is put money in their 401k, and then they did the 401k loan. And what shows up on your next pay stub? The payment for the 401k loan. Yeah. And it shot out their debt to income ratio and their dream home they couldn't qualify for. Because they had put it in their 401k first. So we get benefits by engaging in a government program like a 401k. There are certain benefits, but there are also restrictions. And so we have to be aware of those restrictions, especially if we have any objectives that we want to accomplish that are going to require money before we're 59 and a half. And that's too often not talked about. They just say, oh, you got a job, max out the 401k. Now, side note, just because I said that, I would also say anybody who's starting out, lower income, lower bracket, all of it should be going to Roth 401k.
Yeah. So the Roth is you're funding it with after-tax dollars, and then it's not taxed on the back end, right?
Correct. Not to you, and no income tax to your heirs either.
Oh, wow. Is there a cap on income before you can invest in Roth IRAs?
There's a cap where you have to stop funding a Roth IRA, but there's no income cap if your company has a Roth 401k. Okay. So you can have most 401ks will have, you can put it on the traditional side, which is where it comes out of your income now and it's taxable later, or it can come out before tax and pay taxes later. But if you're a young person now, you might feel like taxes are awful when you first start working, but you're probably in a 15% rate. And if your career goes the way you want it to, you're going to be taking money out in your old age at 40%. So don't do pre-tax now because you're doing reverse tax. Unless you're super charitable, you love the federal government, you think they're doing great things with your money, then you should do that. You should take it out of a 15% bracket right now and then receive the income at a 40% bracket. That would be super generous of people. Unfortunately, that's actually a lot of successful people They do the same things that everybody else is told to do. And so if somebody's, you know, 35 years old right now making $300,000 a year, they're probably not going to be lower than that in their old age. So they shouldn't be taking it out pre-tax at that age. They should be taking it out tax-free. Not to mention you're limited to how much you can put in a 401k. So you're better off filling the entire limit with Roth, because then it's all your money. Anything you do before tax, you have a partner in. It's the IRS, and they get the luxury of telling you what their interest is in the partnership when we exit it.